Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog, a member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. We got a full house tonight. It's Aaron here with John and Peter as we sort of come to an end of the Roots midseason sort of summer break and prepare for the stretch run, the playoff run. The Roots are in a pretty good position right now. We'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the last game, which was so long ago, I barely remember it. And we'll look ahead to the next match against Colorado Springs. So it's been a while, obviously, since we had a chance to think about the Roots. A lot of things have happened in the interim. Leo Messi has made the entire MLS look like one giant Make-A-Wish project, which is pretty humbling, I think, for American soccer. Dunkin' Donuts has all those spiked drinks now. You guys see that? I honestly worry for everyone in the Northeast. It's troubling that you'd have like spiked iced tea coming from Dunkin' Donuts. I think people are going to die.
It's a risk I'm willing to take.
You know, I understand. And there's a nice new mural in the OAK airport of Roots fans flying an Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield flag. As a classic flag that appears at many Roots games. Classic. It's an authentic representation of what happens at Pioneer Field, for sure.
I don't think that
can make my like immediate to-do list on like Roots live action shit posting ideas, but it's on there. I'll get around to making that flag.
I'm sure the sponsors would love that.
Why does the team only advertise it Oakland Airport? Why not, like, you know, at one of these countless billboards off the freeways, or at, like, I don't know, Lake Merritt, where everybody goes to?
It's the team is catering to those Oakland jet setters.
Yeah,
people who fly Southwest.
They know that if you fly Frontier, you're more likely to go to an Oakland Roots game than if you fly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're not the biggest club among American Airlines reward members.
Well, I mean, to Frontier and Southwest credit, I bet those are the only two airlines you even have a chance of getting a direct flight between Oakland and Charleston, South Carolina on. So there's something to be said for them. The Roots wrapped up the first two-thirds of their season with a 1-0 win at Charleston, which is a pretty significant result. Charleston doing pretty good this year. The one was a very generous own goal from, I think his name is Derek Dodson, who just happened to be in the way when Danny Barbier tried to head a cross back into the middle of the box. And it bounced very favorably off of Mr. Dodson's noggin into the back of the Charleston net. That was it. I think the Roots were a little bit lucky that was it. They spent most of the second half holding on for dear life. And then we played something like 45 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the game because I guess the ref didn't want to go home to his wife or something. Great result, although it was the latest in a series of results that were positive for the Roots, even though they looked by far like the worst team on the pitch. Peter, one of your reactions in the wake of this was to praise the genius of Noah Delgado, who appears to be very adept at wringing these three-point results out of subpar performances.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, the Roots have 14 out of their last 18 available points. And, you know, two wins and a draw in their last three in games where they never looked dominating, even against, you know, the first two against kind of bad teams. But what can you say? Like, they're winning. And, you know, for all that there are times where they're holding on for dear life, you know, there were a couple other instances where there were loose balls in the box that the Roots didn't quite, you know, tuck away, or the Charleston game might have been more comfortable. I will also say, you know, in Derek Dodson's defense, I think Barbier's header is going to reach one of the other two unmarked runners that the Roots had going into the box. So I think that's a goal with or without the deflection.
It did look like Cedeno was in pretty good position. Now, we have not nearly enough evidence to know whether or not Barbier's header was going to be accurate, but whatever, it doesn't matter. The other thing that I think was notable about this match was that, Neville Hackshaw played in the midfield while Joseph Nane was in the middle of the back line. And I assume, because this just has to be the default assumption, that anything that happens personnel-wise with the Oakland Roots, I assume that that move was made for defensive reasons. That Hackshaw further forward was meant to disrupt, you know, the last bit of the Charleston build-up or something. I don't know that we're going to see that again, because I don't know that it worked necessarily. I think Danny Barbier got called into all kinds of got called into service in all kinds of situations where you don't really want one of your wide center backs having to engage, because the midfield was disconnected. Now, at the same time, I do think Hackshaw, what was it? Was it Markanich, maybe? The attacking mid, the 10 for Charleston. I don't think he got much of a sniff all night. And I do think that's down to Hackshaw. But that was an interesting one. I somehow doubt we're going to see that again, though, which is fine with me. I just, as a general matter, I don't think putting midfielders into the back line is a good idea.
Well, I think there's some logic to saying that Hackshaw is one of our best ball players and you want him to touch the ball more often. And, you know, maybe to an extent that also neutralizes one of Nane's weaknesses, which is that he has struggled somewhat under pressure. And so you're getting him, more of his touches are coming from Blanchett. And so Nane is not under significant pressure, and he can sort of take his time and figure out where the buildup is going to start from. Where Hackshaw is getting more of the possession under immediate pressure, which he handles really well. But I don't know. All that being said, I don't know that I disagree with you that, you know, we're not likely to see it again.
I did wonder if it was an offensive thing, because when this team was successful at the end of last year, it was because you had two guys in that midfield pivot who are capable of playing the ball, playing accurate long passes, you know, in Dennis and Hernandez. And we haven't had that this year. It's come from Hackshaw and Tamakis on the back line. And part of me did wonder if you move Hackshaw into the midfield to try to recapture some of that, because I think having your playmakers be further forward is probably better than having them be as far back as you can on the team. But I think every single decision that gets made with this team is made with the hope of holding the other team to no goals in a game.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree. I don't know if I want to see Hackshaw back there in the midfield. And to your point there, that maybe it enables some players to go forward. I think that is how maybe Noah likes to use Wolfgang. I think they view him more as a forward as opposed to a wing back, how they play Memo on the left side and Tamakis on the right side. They were without Tamakis. So, you know, how does that impact how the system goes? But, you know, to Noah's credit and to Hackshaw's credit, his shot on target and the 40th minute, I believe, is what led to the goal, the corner, and then the goal. So, I mean, he showed he has that in his tool bag there, that he could pull a shot off from distance, which feels like something that we've just been aching for, you know, all season. Someone who will just say, you know, screw it, I need to make a play because we haven't done shit up to this point. And that's exactly the case was in that instant. I mean, it was, I remember getting a text from you, Aaron, during that whole thing. We're at line 51, and it was just, I think what was your text was like, this is bleak, you know, this is bad. And then 2 minutes later, the goal happens. So it shows that just how quickly things can change in this game. And like we talked about earlier, like you guys talked about, you have to win ugly. Defense came through in this case. I mean, Charleston had a lot of the ball. They had 16 shots. Only 4 of them were on target. So, you know, there's something with this defense. And we could thank Paul Blanchett for this too, is we can structure the system to make the shots coming from hard angles that we know Paul is going to make, he's going to be there for, or he can make a miraculous stop. So we're seeing how that has kind of played into Delgado's system. I mean, and hey, he's having a all-league type of year. And we can say that as well with two other big performers from the match. You know, Barbier, who we talked about, and Memo Diaz. We called them both man of the match recipients, although Barbier's header was in an own goal. He hasn't missed a minute this whole season. You know, that's pretty amazing. That's indicative of a standout year. And same with Memo. You know, if I don't know if the league has a breakout player of the year award, but I think Memo would have to be in contention for that.
Yeah, all very good points. Barbier especially, I think his role this year has been underrated, and you know, his role has gone under the radar. Let me put it like that. His performances have gone under the radar. I think he's been massive, truly, and I think it's notable at this point that of the players who signed for Oakland in like the 4 weeks after Juan Guerra was named manager last year, one remains, and it's Danny Barbier.
Well, and I feel like when they brought in Tomakis, that I thought Barbier was going to be gone that week. You know, if not dealt, then released. And I was wrong, and they were right to keep him. He's been really good. Hackshaw has been so great that I often feel like I'm overlooking Barbier because of Hackshaw's contribution. But the way that Barbier bombs up the left side sometimes with Memo is pretty exciting, and he plays the ball pretty well up there. You know, I think that his academy background shows in some of his like technical skills. You know, he is big and gangly, which means that sometimes the technical skills don't work out right. I can't avoid the backhanded compliment. I just can't. I think the guy's having an incredible season.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just leave it there. So the other guy who has made stuff happen by taking shots from outside the box this season is Johnny Rodriguez, who's been a bit of a revelation. I mean, he was picked by a lot of people, I think, at the beginning of the season to have kind of a breakout campaign, but he has exceeded even those expectations. And as we talk about the last stretch of games for the Roots now, the final 11 games before the playoffs, I think we got to start this conversation by noting that Johnny went down in the Charleston game and was not putting any weight on his ankle when he came off the pitch. Now, we've been trying to read some tea leaves. A picture of him was posted on Instagram, not on the Oakland Roots account, on the Copa Training Center's account. And unfortunately, well, John thinks this picture is good. Peter and I are of the opinion that you can't see Johnny's ankles in this picture, so you have no way of knowing whether he's wearing normal socks or a wrap of some kind or a cast, you know, something like that. The children, he's speaking to a group of children who happen to be very conspicuously placed such that the bottom of his legs are not visible in this picture. And you know, in past years, like 2 years ago, if this happened 2 years ago with the way that team handled injury news, I'd be like, oh, he's definitely not playing again, for sure. This was absolutely intentional. Someone from the front office went up to the person taking pictures at this event and said, you better not put his ankles on Instagram. But I don't know if we're still operating the same way now. I mean, we actually released the formation and the way it's going to line up on the field on Twitter before the game. So maybe we're in a brave new world as far as injury information goes. Who knows? It is worth noting, you know, in this context that the Roots have, would you say, elevated? They've signed off the 510 roster, Luis Saldana, who is a forward, I believe. Right, John? So, I mean, that could mean that they feel like they need someone, you know, there. They need another body there. It could mean that Boubacar Nye is not going to be available as soon as they thought, you know, because that's someone I think they were counting on having available after this little break since they got since they let Formella go down to Phoenix. I think the last 11 games looks very different for the Roots if there's no Johnny. I mean, let's just talk quickly about what's coming up, right? As we go into this last stretch of the season, mathematically, this is not the case, but I think we all agree, for all intents and purposes, Sacramento and San Antonio are going to be 1-2 in the West. They're just a cut above everyone else. At the moment, as I'm speaking to you, and I actually don't know if either of these teams plays midweek this week, but as I'm speaking, Sacramento holds has the edge over San Antonio, but San Antonio has a game in hand, which if they win, they will go back on top of the West. And then there's a real jumble. 3-8, Oakland, San Diego, Orange County, Colorado Springs, Phoenix, and El Paso. Oakland is the best of that group right now. They're on 37 points. El Paso and Phoenix are at the bottom on 32, which means that Oakland's position is a bit precarious, I think. You know, I mean, any run of three matches that go poorly have the potential to send Oakland from third down to sixth or seventh or something. Now, there's another little gap until you get to the teams that are sitting outside the playoffs right now. So I think Oakland's position in the playoffs is reasonably secure. Obviously, you can't take anything for granted, but reasonably secure. Their spot right now with a home playoff game in the first round, very, very tenuous. So we'll look at the schedule here for the last 11 games, and it's kind of balanced, honestly. So they get games against San Antonio and Sacramento, which is, if Oakland win one of those games, we'll have said that's a great opportunity because that's a way to put pressure on one of those teams. If they lose them both, we're going to be like, ah, that's so annoying. We had to play both of those teams coming down the stretch. They get
four home fixture on both, though.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, if you're going to get them at this point in the season, you might as well get them in Hayward. So you get four matches against that other group of teams in the playoffs. So Colorado Springs, Orange County, San Diego, and El Paso are all left on the schedule. Those are massive six-pointers. Like, that is huge. That's really I hesitate to say this with such gusto, but it really feels like that's where the season is going to be made or broken right there. And the last three games of the season, Orange County, San Diego, El Paso, I mean, that could be very exciting, or it could be unbelievably frustrating. They also have games against New Mexico and Las Vegas and Monterey, all of whom are below the playoff line in the West. And then two matches against mid-table East teams in Louisville City and FC Tulsa. So, like, honestly, like, that's a pretty decent collection. It's not too hard. It's not too easy. There's a lot of opportunity. A lot of ways things could go wrong. But I think, you know, if you're a competitor, you want to have the teams, you want to be playing the teams that you are competing with for these spots at this point. You're right. You want the outcome to be in your hands as much as possible. And that's, I think, a blessing of this schedule. Now, again, if they don't have Johnny Rodriguez, this looks a lot different. But as it stands, I think they're in a pretty good spot, personally. Sorry, go ahead, Peter.
The odds are really good that the Roots in their last 11 games will face who they would face in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, sort of under almost Phoenix is like the only team that they don't see who's in a playoff spot right now. So, you know, watch these 11 games. I think it's also relevant. You know, what stuck out to me on the schedule is the switchbacks in New Mexico in the next two games are 6-point games against the playoff line teams right now. And so it's sort of, if you get 6 points out of those two games, the playoffs are basically locked in because you have also knocked out the team that would, you know, even if things went off the rails for the Roots after that, they would have an 8-point lead on the playoffs or something, you know, that is unlikely to come undone.
Now, another thing to consider here, of course, is what do the schedules of the teams they are competing with look like? And honestly, the only schedule I'm kind of jealous of is Phoenix. They get two games against RGV. They get Las Vegas. They get Indy 11 in Detroit City. They get New Mexico United. I mean, they still have a lot of teams at the bottom. That said, do you guys find Phoenix impressive? Like, I mean, the Roots played them twice in that stretch where they were hamstrung because of the Gold Cup, and they got the two draws. You're not going to be surprised that Phoenix has a lot of draws. They do have a pretty decent goal differential, but they just, they don't seem all that impressive. They seem very up and down, which I guess could work to their favor. They could surprise somebody, but I think if you're the Roots and you're looking at these other schedules, then you got to say one of the teams you're facing is going to have an easier path to the playoffs right now. Phoenix might be who you choose, honestly. I don't want to knock on all kinds of wood here, but I feel like they are the weakest. They have a lot of potential, and obviously they just added Polish magician Derek Formella. But they, over the course of the season, I think have looked a lot weaker than some of these other teams. I don't know. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, my thought on them the whole season is they are wildly underperforming. You see how many players they've brought in. It's a team that is looking, just judging off of the roster moves, it's a team in a win now mentality. I mean, you really changed over the whole roster, and didn't just change it over. You spent quite a bit of money on the players you're bringing in. You know, this isn't saying, oh, I'm developing and thinking about the future. It's, yes, we have a team with some potential, but we think we could win now, and we're going to spend to win now. We're going to spend to get back to the top where we think we belong. I mean, their press conferences has pretty much said that, confirmed it. I mean, so any way they want to cut it, yeah, you are building towards the future. You have a coach in his really entering his second year of his career. There's going to be some hiccups. But I mean, you make these moves to say we're going to contend for a title. And that was what the preseason, I mean, it's hard to put stock in preseason rankings and preseason profiles and blah, 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 blah. But the only information we have is what we have. And the preseason people like John Morrissey and Ethan Murray for this league site were predicting Phoenix as a title contender. I mean,
Nick Murray.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at Phoenix as a pretty scary team. They signed some good talent. So I think what that fan base has to come to grips with is their expectations under Juan, who is still kind of getting his feet as a coach, as a strategist, and implementing those in games. It's sort of interesting seeing Juan, a younger guy, trying to get his traction in the league, while Noah, an older, more veteran mind who has been around this game, but also entering his first coaching job, he's sort of more refined, and you see how the system is a bit more refined compared to Guerra, where it was kind of, you know, mayhem. I mean, you look at Phoenix's games this season, and they're sort of mayhem. I mean, you look at how they're using the goalkeeper, and it's coming back to bite them, like against San Antonio. I mean, you guys could watch the highlights. The goalkeeper came so far out of net, like 25 yards, trying to greet the ball, and he was so super late to it. It kind of reminded me of Emi Martinez against whoever Villa just played, Newcastle. So, I mean, yeah, to answer your question in this very long-winded response, no, yeah, it's I think Phoenix is very, very underperforming. Well, we can ask, I wanted to ask you guys, how do we feel about, it's easy to say how we feel about Root season, but do you feel we're overperforming? Are we right around where we are, should be? What do you guys think?
When I watch the team, especially recently, I'm not blown away by what I see on the field, but you cannot argue with the results so far. And I think that on the table, the Roots are overperforming my preseason expectations. You know, right now they are in a position that is a home playoff berth, and that was our reach goal that I don't know that I would have said that they were going to make preseason. I mean, especially with, you know, especially when you consider that Rito was dealt and that the attack has not developed the way we expected it to. You know, I think that Johnny is having a great season, but if you had told me preseason that he was the guy, you know, he is the center of the attack for two thirds of the season, I would have been skeptical. But he's been good enough. You know, he's been great. And yeah, so I think overperforming, and, you know, to return to a point that Aaron teed me up for earlier, I think you have to credit Noah Delgado, because I think that the Roots are playing a lot of players that other managers wouldn't have thought they wanted going into this season. You know, and Noah has a whole bunch of guys playing to a level that I think other coaches didn't see. I mean, they, you know, we didn't see when they picked up Cedeno, and Cedeno has been pretty good. And I think that that's, you know, credit to the players and a credit to Delgado. And so, you know, my answer is that I think the Roots are overperforming.
Yeah, I think the answer has to be yes. You know, if you had told me before the season that we would deal Rito and Charlie Dennis away without really replacing them, that the attacking signings that we brought in over the offseason would be mostly duds, and that, you know, our biggest signings would be defenders, I think I would say we're in for some pretty dreadful football, and we're going to be lucky if we score enough goals to be successful. And by successful, I mean we'd be lucky to score enough goals to make it over the playoff line. And instead, this team has shown that, like, when it's hitting its highs, it's really good. And I think if you could bottle what we saw in, you know, in that Indy 11 game, or in that was it Birmingham? Yeah, the Birmingham game, and know that you were going to get that in a one-off situation and in the playoffs. Like, you put that performance up against just about any team in this league. There have been a lot of other games that haven't looked anywhere near that good. We can be upfront and honest. They've gotten lucky a few times. They've been unlucky before too. So I don't really, whatever, you know, they've put themselves in a position to succeed. They've gotten the bounces that they've needed. And honestly, all you can ask of any team is to put themselves in a position to succeed. Whether this is a formula for long-term success, we shall see. But they're in a great position right now. And honestly, I think if you were to say, you know, you take those teams ranked third through eighth right now in the table in the West, and you say, which position would you want? I think there's probably only two answers that make any sense. One is Oakland. I mean, this is a little obvious, right? They're at the top. You want to be in front. Orange County, I think, is the only other situation you might swap for your own. I mean, they are hot. You know, they've won 7 of the last 8. They just added a fellow on loan from Minnesota United, Cameron Dunbar, who has scored against the Roots in the past as a member of LA Galaxy too. You know, they're charging hard. They have really turned it around. I would be worried about them, you know, as a fan of other teams competing for those playoff spots. But I think that the situation the Roots are in is equally as good right now. And they've got a chance to close out this season very successfully, which is really all you can ask for as a player, as a fan.
I'd like to follow up on one thing that I said. I said that the Roots were overperforming. I meant that the Roots are overperforming expectations, not that I expect them to regress to playing worse. For any players who may be listening.
No, I mean, yeah, I think the answer is they're definitely, you know, overperforming the expectations. I think, I mean, you could look at it on paper, you know, a lot of your international signings just haven't really panned out like you expect. You know, you make those signings thinking they're going to be starters. You look at Anwar Peláez, he has taken a backseat to Johnny, although he's had 23 appearances. So you see that there, it, you know, Noah is still finding that time for him. There is still some untapped potential there, which is encouraging. Trayvon Reed just hasn't worked out. Kevin Wright has been an afterthought. And that might be credit to Memo. I mean, we could talk about Memo all day. I think I said earlier, breakout player of the year. I would probably mean most improved player of the year. Well, breakout player of the year might be Johnny Rodriguez. I mean, you don't expect for him to take the starting nine role after what we just had with Otar. I mean, we identified in the offseason striker as the number one need for the second straight year in a row. You know, and we were always wondering, when is he coming? When is he coming? When is he coming? And then Peláez came through, a somewhat unknown player from South America. So, I mean, to see what Johnny has done to really take that next step with his development, I mean, we can praise Delgado. I mean, he's getting performances out of younger players. You look at Danny Gomez. We're bringing up players from the academy predominantly. I mean, it's a big culture difference that we talked about before the podcast. You know, there's a culture difference, a philosophy difference in roster building that Oakland Roots seem to have compared to these other teams. We're really focusing on bringing up through our own academy rather than developing other teams' talent. You know, players who are under contract elsewhere, like Orange County bringing in Cameron Dunbar. You know, it seems that Roots, Jordan Farrell, Noah Delgado prefer developing their own. I mean, the name of the game is increasing players' values and then sending them off elsewhere. So hopefully that's what's happening here. I mean, we could only hope. Anyways, I forgot what point I was trying to make.
That's okay. It was a good one regardless. The end of the season run begins with a home match against Colorado Springs Switchbacks, the first of those real six-pointers that we had highlighted. Colorado Springs, you could put a couple of different spins on their season depending on how you want to look at it. Either they're very inconsistent, you know, and they don't really have a stretch of sustained success at any point. Their last five matches, one win, two draws, two losses, you know, it's not going to blow your socks off. Or you could say that, look, they had a stretch of five losses in the middle of the season. You take that out and they are in a very good spot. Obviously, you know, you can't fuck with time and space like that, but I think that's a legitimate way to look at what Colorado Springs is doing. You know, this is a chance for John to heckle Christian Herrera, although he appears to have lost his starting job to a fellow named Joe Kuzminski. So maybe you'll have to aim your ire at the bench rather than the pitch, but this is obviously one John has had circled on the calendar all season. This team gets goals from a lot of different places. Not many. You know, they actually have a negative goal differential, but they have one guy who's stands out, Romario Williams, and then a bunch of people who contributed two or three names. You know, you might remember from watching USL a lot, right? Malik Foster, Juan Tejada, Duke LaCroix. I mean, these are names you've heard. It's not a spectacular showing so far, though, I think when you add it all up, and they are atrocious on the road. You know, they've, of their 33 points in the season, 23 have been earned at home. On the road, they have three wins and a draw and eight losses. So you won't be surprised also, I think, to learn that the draw was Phoenix Rising. I mean, that just seems written in the stars. This is a great way to start. You kind of hope there's no rust and you hope that Johnny is okay. But as imposing as Colorado Springs might be, you know, given their road performances and the fact that they don't seem to have much of a rhythm right now, I feel pretty good about Oakland's chances here, with the caveats that I've mentioned.
I would like to know that Tamakis is healthy, because I think that was a bit of a question mark going into those 2 weeks off. And I think that has a big impact on how good the Roots are overall. I think they can win this game without Johnny and without Tamakis, but I'm a lot more confident with one or both of them.
Couple notes going into this match. Delgado is one win away from tying Farrell for 17 wins to be the most winningest manager in franchise history. He is 7 games away from being the most tying Farrell for the most active manager in Roots history at 43 games. He'll pass him on September 30th versus San Antonio. But yeah, one win away from Farrell. I think that's pretty awesome, especially for Delgado. I mean, it talks to all the praise that we've been giving him this whole podcast here. So, great coach, a lot of potential still. I mean, it's been fun to work with him and watch him, build this team.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's awesome that he's been around the team a long time and that, you know, he sort of, I'm glad that the guy who's becoming the Roots sort of first longest term manager to date is a guy who was around as an assistant for a while, who knows the club and cares about the club and likes it, you know.
All right, so let's get down to brass tacks. What do we expect to see? John, how are the Roots going to beat Colorado Springs?
Roots are going to look good against Colorado Springs. Johnny's going to be in. Tamakis is going to be in. It's going to be a great performance. They're going to win 3-1. Get it done.
3-1 was going to be my prediction, but I'll say 2-0 so that we're different. So that we have some daylight between us.
Come on, man. Just hold true to it.
I'm talking myself into the 2-0. Colorado does score more goals than, or Aaron said that Colorado doesn't really score many goals. They are basically tied with the Roots on goals for. But
yeah, well, Oakland's attack is pretty hard to watch sometimes. So
yeah, fair enough. So anyway, I'm going to stick with 2-0. Paul Blanchett saves the Roots bacon, and it's only late that the Roots make it easy with the second goal. I think Tamakis plays. I think Johnny doesn't.
I feel like the Roots are going to come out of the gate pretty on fire. Let's say. I don't know if it's going to translate to goals. When it all clicks, it looks beautiful. I'm not sure it's going to click. There's too much rust here. I'm seeing 1-0, maybe a little bit more comfortable than that scoreline implies, because they'll be at home. They'll be rested. They'll be able to control the game, even if it's just a 1-goal lead. But I'm thinking it's going to be in jeopardy most of the game. That's my prediction.
A Paul the Wall night.
How many Paul the Wall nights can we possibly have? But I think we got another
every
one here.
Every night yeah. Can be a Paul the Wall night.
It's another brick in the Paul the Wall here. You know, the weather should be great. Should be a great night to watch some association football at Pioneer Stadium, and hopefully we'll see you there. And until then, up the Roots.